Bloom of the Old Man Orange Podcast. I'm Spencer Scott Holmes.
And I'm Ryan Tunigan.
And boy, this is a movie that I know I've always wanted to watch. I know Ryan told me about it back in the day that he watched it, something like that. And it's that one that you always hear cool factoids about, all the behind-the-scenes things and all like the mishaps and so on that went along with this like crazy dark adventure. And that's the 1996 Island of Dr. Monroe. You know, the one that's got Val Kilmer and Marlon Brando in it, you know, and just watching this thing come together. And it's funny because they talk about it like it's one of the worst, you know, movies, like, you know, they give it like all that kind of crap. Mostly whenever movies just don't make money for some reason, that just makes them feel like, oh, it's no good. Why? Oh, I just didn't make enough money. What about the movie? Oh, who cares about the movie? It didn't make money, so it's terrible, you know. Because I watched this, I'm like, dude, this thing's great. Like, you know, I'm not going to say it's like the best movie ever, but I mean, like, it was just so interesting. And so, like, I like just the monsters and the creatures and Marlon Brando. Just, like, it's one of those ones, I bet you, a nightmare to be the director, both of them. But the fact that, like, all the shit that Marlon Brando's doing on there, like, I think it's like, you just don't know what you're going to expect when you're watching this one.
Well, we're doing a kind of somewhat of a double feature. We're talking about Isle of Dr. Monroe, 96. And then we're also talking about the documentary Lost Soul, like the doomed journey of the director's name in Isle of Dr.
Richard
Monroe.
Richard Stanley,
yeah, which is one of those things, because yeah, this is one of those movies I knew of it, that I heard people saying it's one of the worst movies ever. I'm like, is it really? And then I watched it, and I'm one of those people, I'm not sure, I don't think I liked it as much as you. I like the movie. I think one of the biggest problems with me is I saw the documentary before I saw the movie. So yeah, knowing what he wanted to make and then seeing the movie, I saw that kind of represented. So I'm like, well, for this movie's not nearly as bad as people talk about. It definitely is a Frankenstein of a movie, and it definitely kind of shows in some areas, and there's some parts that seem a little sloppy and kind of just clicked together, but it's by no means like, I still think it's an enjoyable movie. Just the monster effects alone are kind of creepy, and kind of I like the Apocalypse Now approach the movie takes. And then, yeah, and then like, I think the documentary adds so much more intrigue to it, but at the exact same time though, it's also just like every so often you hear people talk about this is the worst thing ever, and then you watch it and like, do you watch movies?
That's a thing. Yeah, whenever I hear that, I'm like, you obviously didn't watch very many movies this year. That's all I know. Like that whenever people say that. Now, granted, I will say it is one of those movies you couldn't just show this to anybody. It is definitely, you got to be into weird shit to kind of like enjoy it. Like, it's that one that if you have a bunch of just kind of like regular folks and you brought them over for a movie night and you pulled this one out, it might not go over very well, you know. But if you have people that like weird stuff and like these interesting things, and you mentioned with it, literally the Heart of Darkness, whatever, Apocalypse Now kind of stuff going on in it. And I think that's probably why I liked it so much, because it reminded me a lot of Apocalypse Now. And that's just one of my favorite movies of all time. So when I saw like all those kind of elements, I mean, it's got Marlon Brando. So of course it makes it just feel even more like a sequel to Apocalypse Now, almost in a weird way.
Well, it's also one of the reasons he came back, because he still really liked that character a lot. So he decided to, I mean, I think he also just, Marlon Brando is just a weird guy. It was funny listening to watching the documentary in here, and like, Marlon Brando got along with everybody in the cast except Val Kilmer. That's a Val Kilmer thing. And he got along with the crew, but he loved fucking with like the producers. He just had such ire and hatred for like his job for some reason, even though he's like doing something millions of people dream they could do. And I just think it's funny, at some point, well, we'll talk about the movie proper and then we'll talk more about the documentary afterwards. But I do think it's funny, at some point in the documentary, like, he says, like, we're just driving on the way to location. Marlon Brando has me pull over and turns to me and says, let's just say the producer's name is John Milton. He looks at me and says, like, let's fuck John Milton. Like, out of nowhere. Like, what? Like, let's fuck him. Like, what are you? Just because he could. Like, he could like call the shots and just bring this thing down if he wanted to.
Well, that was the thing. It's like, yeah, because it was, I think that was the New Line Cinema creator guy. and stuff. So the fact that he's just like, yeah, Marlon Brando's just, and it's amazing that people even hire Marlon Brando. I really have to say, it's like, we know that he's been like the toughest guy in the world to deal with. I think people like to take the challenge. I don't know if it's one of those ones. You got to say you worked with Marlon Brando, but I think there's some people like, I could take him on. Yeah, yeah. Everybody else was a bitch before me. I'm going to show them that I could tell. It never works out. Marlon Brando runs the show. That's, you're literally, he's the king of the castle.
It's kind of like, it's not exactly the same. It's not the same thing. It's somewhat similar though. I think that he's running off the goodwill of like five classic movies, and he's just able to coast on that. And as long as he turns out a good performance, you just got to take it. You just got to shut the fuck up. Like, because I honestly think, like, it's gonna be a weird comparison here. Not that they all suck, but it's like, every Pirates of the Caribbean movie is just coasting on the goodwill of the first one. let's be honest. Yeah. It's really the first one. Like, maybe this will be as good as the first one. Maybe, you know? And then, so I think Marlon Brando is kind of doing that thing. Like, he's going to bring in, I mean, Godfather, Superman, you know, all this. I think that people are just like, he's going to bring it. Like, oh, he's going to bring it, but he's going to make your life living hell in the process. You know, and everyone's going to say, Marlon Brando's so good. And the director's like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing, too, is, gosh, like that Richard Stanley guy who was the original guy as the director on there. And that's what the documentary kind of generally the main focus of him. Dude, like those first two movies that they showed that he made, like Hardwire and what the heck was the other one was like a Western horror. Dust Devil. Yeah, I'm like, dude, those things look badass. And I looked them up, and they're like, they're next impossible to find. And if you find a DVD, it's like $200. It's like, okay, well, I got to go deep diving for this. So this guy, literally his own movies are like buried out there in like the desert with E.T., but they looked awesome. I was like, man, that guy actually had some movies I really wanted to see and so on like this. And he seemed like a kind of cool guy. I think the downfall was that he kind of got thrown in this project. It's like, cool, I'm going to do this. And then all of a sudden, like New Line's like, you know what? Let's utilize this project to make our big blockbuster. You know, we're going to make a Kevin Costner size movie. And I felt like, oh, well, that's probably where the dude just got screwed over. Cause that's what it just seemed like. It seemed like the second that the stakes kept getting raised farther and farther and farther, I'm like, dude, you just got this dude who made two independent films, and all of a sudden you're like giving him like, you know, the biggest keys to the castle. You know, New Line's trying to go hardcore. You got both Marlon Brando and Val Kilmer, who's pretty much at like the top tier of his like, you know, fame.
Well, it's also something to the effect of like, they talked about, because they interview everybody, not everybody, there's some people
they don't got, you know, Val Kilmer or Marlon Brando.
Yeah. Well, there's some questions that weren't even brought up, or they didn't even answer. Maybe I missed them. Maybe we can circle back, but we'll get to that later. But just for this, before we go into the main movie, yeah, it did seem like a situation where the guy had a weird, crazy vision, but a weird, crazy vision you could probably possibly pull off like a first Ninja Turtles like budget, or even a like maybe like something more even than that, but then
a regular New Line Cinema movie.
Yeah, an average New Line Cinema movie, not this big bombastic thing. And they just threw this guy into that. Like, he seemed kind of rather unprofessional about it. He seemed like he wasn't sure. Like, it's like, I'm sure there's probably some things, there was a learning curve, but you guys just kind of threw this. He went in with a much simpler vision. You guys kept on making it bigger and bigger and bigger. And then on top of that, like, I honestly think there's like a lot of the guys, a lot of the producers, and a lot of the like production people they were talking to, they all seem pretty cool. There's only one guy that seemed like a real fucking dickhead, and that was the dude, I don't remember his name, but he's the dude like in a crimson button-up shirt with like gray slicked back hair. Like, that guy
was that cool. The guy who was like really like, he was really animated in his sense when he talked.
He was the guy who really did not like Richard Spencer from the get-go. He was the guy who's kind of like came in, he's like, you know, Richie, he seemed like a weird guy. And
then, the New Line Cinema owner.
Is that the New Line that Cinema guy? Owner?
He had kind of gray hair, curly, like, you know, slick back. Yeah. He was like, I mean, I kind of get it, because like once the money started getting rolled up, you're like, shit, we really have like an experimental fella on our, you know what I mean? I think because at first it was supposed to be like an $8 million movie, and then once they put Marlon Brando in there, that felt like, oh, that's where it kind of starts, is the Marlon Brando and the Val Kilmer. It's one of those movies where, if you would have just had some maybe like B-lister actors instead, that, you know, not that, you know, it might not be as fun as we sort of got, but you could probably have it like that way, and it would be a much easier project. And I think that was the thing, is then he got kind of cold feet in the sense.
Well, at the same time, I also think that's more of a him thing. Like, I also think it's one of those things. He seemed kind of like one of those guys, because every so often you'll like, I've seen enough like documentaries where this is where this thing went bad. And there's always like the money guy who like blames every other, he'll find one or two people to blame and just zoom in on that. And obviously it was so much more than just that, but just because he's like, he was like, he seems like one of those guys who just like, he likes money. And maybe at one point in time, he likes film, but he fucking hates artists. Like someone comes in a trench coat and a brimmed hat. And he's like, fuck, you know, like he's like, shit, he's got a fucking vision. God fucking damn it. You know? Or it's like, cause he was like, say to me, he's like, I already didn't take a liking to this guy. And then he was like anything like, I mean, there was a big fucking tsunami. This fucking asshole. There's a fucking tsunami. This fucking dipshit, you know. They only had 1 week to get this thing rolling. This fucking asshole, you know. and then at some point, like, I'm exaggerating a little bit. But then, like, because he just seemed to kind of, like, really hone in on the guy's lack of professionalism. Like, you guys kept on making things bigger and bigger and bigger. And then you were already trying to swap him out and all this kind of shit. So I kind of like, I mean, he didn't seem like the worst guy in the world or anything, but he seemed like a real fucking prick, like a standard kind of like Hollywood producer type, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I saw him being a little bit more realistic. I feel there was a producer guy that had like the blue and white checkered shirt. That guy seemed like the most like, cause he's like, I wanted to like Richard, but he would do weird things. Like he wouldn't show up to meetings. And I was like, dude, they're not going to come to you. You got to come to all these things. And you could kind of see that guy was like, I was giving him the college try.
You talk about the Australian dude or whatever.
No, he wasn't Australian. This guy, I think, was just American. He had like white hair, glasses, and he had a checkered shirt was, I think, the best. A blue and white checkered shirt, I want to say. I watched a documentary last night. I'm trying to piece these all together, but that dude seemed like he was kind of like a realistic, like, hey, okay, like, you know, we're giving him a chance, something like that. And once he started kind of falling apart, because it seemed like that was the thing, is that I think it's almost like if you gave Kevin Smith this movie, like right after doing Clerks, that's like almost the way I kind of looked at it. Like, yeah. you can't just do one or two indie movies and then all of a sudden be like, here you go, here's the biggest movie ever. Like, you know, that almost never works. I mean, you know, that's kind of even like Alien 3 with, what's his face?
Fincher.
Yeah, Fincher, because I think he only had one or two movies before that one, and that kind of was like the same thing. It's like sometimes, you know, there's probably examples where it does work out, of course, like many other things, you know, I guess like a Tarantino in a sense, but...
Well, so a lot of times beyond, they do that thing where they'll get like a rookie director, maybe they have one or two movies under their belt, and you get something like 500 Days of Summer. Like, I'm not sure if he made a big movie before that, or like another, or not a big movie, but another movie before that, 500 Days of Summer. And then, like, people like that movie. It's a movie people recognize with a distinct style. Let's grab him and we'll say we can coast off. We got this distinct style, this vision, yet it's Sony. And he's going to do whatever the fuck we tell him to for the Spider-Man reboot. So you get something kind of like that where you don't even see the director in the work, really, you know?
Yeah, no. And it's one of those ones, like, you know, because the cool thing in that documentary is it shows kind of like the initial plans. And I guess like the thing, too, is, you know, the Dr. Monroe thing, like just to give an overall idea of the synopsis of like what kind of goes on in this movie is there's this one dude who's trapped out at sea. He's like, you know, there's like three of them left and they're pretty much fighting over like the last bit of fresh water and food and so on like that. And they get into a scuffle and two guys fall over and get eaten by sharks. And it's kind of like, oh, good. That all worked out for me then. And then he passes out and then Val Kilmer just picks him up in his boat. He's like, hey, man, take you to the island. Cool. We'll get you out of here whenever we feel like it. You know, it's all going to work out. Oh, that's nice. This Val Kilmer guy seems like a real nice fella, you know. And in the process, he finds out that there's this dude, Dr. Monroe, on the island who's like, you know, society shunned me for my scientific experimentation, so I just brought it out to the island of, you know, Queensland, and that's where I've been working for 17 years, which I thought that number was kind of a weird one. Like, I felt like he should have said, been like, oh, he's been out here for like 37 years or something like ridiculously longer. Mm-hmm. But even still, so there's just all these experiments where he's been making hybrid human animaloid creatures or whatever. You know, he's literally making animorphs out here before, you know, animorphs was a thing.
And like the thing is, I guess the book, I never read the H.G. Wells book, but I guess you say, oh, look, it's a man who's also a dog. But in this, they don't look just like, oh, look, a dog that walks on you know, his hind legs or whatever. They make it look like they're deformed. They look like it looks like it hurts to breathe, you know, like he's still like, this is as good as it's been. And this is like, we took 47 years to get to this point, and this is as far as he's gotten.
Yeah, exactly. And I picked up the book. Actually, I found it for 99 cents on Amazon. I'm like, yeah, I kind of want to read it. It's actually like under 200 pages. So, you know, that it's like, okay, you can get this done. And, I'm interested just to see where that book kind of goes with this. And then there's two other movies, two main movies that came out. There's like The Island of Lost Souls in 28 or 32. And then there's one in the 70s too, that they said, like, it has Douglas Fairbanks, I think, in it. And they said that one was like one of those ones, like, it should have been cool. Like the 32 one was pretty solid for what it was. And then they said the 70s one was kind of like, they just didn't go far enough with it. You know, so the whole point of this one was like, we're going to take it real far this time.
And like a point, yeah, because like, Richard Stanley said he was disappointed because on the cover, it shows like the transition of like a lady's face, a pretty lady's face, to like a panther. He says, mm-hmm. We never got to see that, so I'm going to do that for my movie. But then by the time his movie happens, we see a little bit. We don't see that full transition, though. But so they get to the island, and he's doing all these experimentations. And I think there's something interesting they do with some of the animals, because when they first show like the main villain, you do have a little bit of like I guess, well, it depends on who you call the main villain. I guess let's just say Hyena is the main villain.
Yeah.
When you first see Hyena and he sees his friend, the panther, get killed, there is a little bit of this, like, you do see, like, his heartache, and you do see him, he's kind of like, what's the fucking point? Like, right there, and, like, with all that prosthetic and all that makeup, he is very immediately just kind of like, he's like, that's our dad. Why does our dad hurt us? You know what I mean? But even though like the I thought it was interesting, cause you know, the whole thing with dogs, cause most of his staff, most of like Monroe's right-hand men are like dog hybrids for loyalty, but even they kind of get a little bit more of like, I want to hunt. I want to kill. I want it. So when they're given the opportunity to kill something, like, oh, that felt fucking good.
Yeah, because for some reason Dr. Monroe is like a vegan out there on the island. He's like, oh, don't you dare eat my rabbits now. Don't be like Val Kilmer, that maniac. Fucking hate Val Kilmer.
Well, it's also like he's a vegan. It's like, why are you making so many, like, let's make humans like of every animal you can make a hybrid of, why you say things that run on all fours and eat other things? Like, what do you think you want to go, like, oh, rabbit people, dog people is,
yeah, like characters out of Sonic the Hedgehog the animated series, not like a bunch of predators. Well, you know what, I was trying to prove a point that you could get these predators, you know, to become civilized folks, you know, I was going to get them real jobs one day, you know, and that's what it was. They were just going to integrate with society.
Yeah, it would all work out. You know, they get a job at like Chuck E. Cheese. Before you know it, they'd be replacing those animatronics on stage.
Yeah.
Before they go feral and like attack a kid in the ball pit, you know.
Yeah.
For like locking eyes too long. there's a thing with like the like, what was it? They had rabbits. Like, he was just collecting rabbits out there, and like Val Kilmer like killed the rabbit so he could like cook it later. And then like when they're eating dinner, they're having like, oh, it's all vegan. And Val Kilmer has like a full rabbit. You see all the animals going, oh, fuck, just like staring at it like they're about to nut right there. And then like Monroe's like, what the fuck? What are you doing that? What are you doing that? Like, they didn't see me kill it either. It's just this thing that looks good. Like, you know, it's all pissed off. Sorry, coming over a cold.
Yeah, it's like one of those ones. But yeah, Val Kilmer's there. I just feel like the whole time it's like both the character and Val Kilmer just feel like he's just there to like dick with Marlon Brando. Because even Val Kilmer's character, as he goes on, I'm like, is he doing a Marlon Brando impersonation in the movie itself? Oh, he's fucking really committing to it. Like, he's just being like, oh, I'm just gonna fucking like, you know, fucking punk him in his own movie that he's in with me.
When we cover the documentary later, that's, yeah, this was the Kilmer versus Brando show. And even the guy who's the main character, that's a castaway, I forget that actor's name.
Yeah.
He wasn't even supposed to be that the main character. He was supposed to be well, first off, the guy who's originally supposed to be like the castaway was Val Kilmer. And yeah. then Val Kilmer was like, no, this is way more interesting over here. I think we should do this. So then he swapped places with the guy who was the castaway. Like, okay, so Val Kilmer is not the main character. He is the secondary kind of antagonist force, sort of, with the guy who gets to steal all the screen time. And then the guy who was the castaway, he bumped out, like, yeah, fuck this. So I guess they had to do some reshoots or something, but then they don't even explain, like, that dude's side of the story of the guy who's actually on screen. So, yeah, at least that's how I took it, yeah.
I think that dude's David Thewlis.
Yeah, because I didn't really know him. He was the bad guy in Dragonheart.
Oh, okay. I was like, he looks kind of familiar, but I couldn't piece anything together there. And then of course, the other big actress we have in there is Fairuza Balk, you know, yeah. Waterboy represent and all that stuff. Ella Craft, and she plays Marlon Brando's daughter, which she becomes the Panther Lady that was apparently also created in the 1932 movie, and they just like the Panther Lady so much that they've always kept that character, like, in the series.
Well, it's kind of, I guess, a character kind of like how sometimes in comics they bring a character like Harley Quinn or something, or they take a plot line like Heart of Ice, like, you're not so good, why don't we just, like, make that canon? So I guess they kind of did that, like, well, people like Hot Panther Ladies, so let's just bring her back. She's a staple, even though she was never originally there.
Yeah, but believe me, if one day they're going to have a character called Felicia, it's all going to make sense.
Yeah, just wait and see.
You know, but yeah, that guy too. It's weird because, yeah, the main character, David or whatever, whatever his character's name is, we'll just go by his actor's name. I'm hoping that's who that is. I hope it's not the one of the other guys in there and just he happened to get lower billing than everybody else.
Well, just was there something in the documentary? Because I feel like they just mentioned they brought him in and then they never talked about his experience. Didn't they say that, like, the other guy, yeah, like, left and they just never even talk about the other guy that came in?
Yeah, well, it's weird because he wasn't in the documentary. You would have thought he would have been the guy you could have got, you know, yeah. Not Val, of course, not Matt Marlin, because I think he was passed away by the time that documentary came out. Because documentary is a little bit older. Like, I thought it was a little bit more reasonable. So, it's like 2013, I think it was, because it was kind of tough to find. Yeah. Like, it wasn't just easy. Like, I got it for free because I got $3 from Amazon for watching a Mexican Heritage Lego movie for like 15 seconds, and they gave me $3 for it. And then I used those $3 to buy rent the documentary.
Mexican Heritage Lego movie.
Yeah, it was pretty much, it just showed all these little kids running into a room, and then they were like putting together Legos, and it was almost just like no whites allowed Legos. We're keeping Whitey out of this one.
Keep your gentrification that way.
But it was like, I was like, oh, cool, 15 seconds, $3, awesome, I'm gonna watch this Dr. Monroe doc. nothing, I'm not gonna spend it on anything Mexican Heritage, I'm just gonna go straight to Dr. Monroe. Because I think that's what they wanted you to do. They were like, we're going to give you $3.
Colonizing an island. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to give you $3, and here's a list of like 30 Mexican, you know, American heritage movies and stuff. You're like, ah, never mind. Hold on. Wait a second. I can use this on anything? Well, yep. There we go. Dr. Monroe. That's what I want to watch, that documentary. Because you can't watch it. I couldn't find it anywhere else. I mean, it was on one of those like ones of commercials, but God forbid I have to watch commercials. I'd rather just rent something. I'm like, commercials online, I feel like, are even worse than commercials if it was on like TV.
Yeah, sometimes they can be the worst, really, but it's just like, if you just tough it out, here's $3.
Yeah, tough out this 15-second ad by Lego. But yeah, getting into that there and getting that documentary and all that good stuff. Remember, where the heck did we leave off at? Oh, the main dude, David or whatever. Yeah, it's weird. He's not in that documentary. And even in the movie itself, like, you really don't know why the hell was he on like that ship? I mean, like, it doesn't explain. That's why I almost kind of wonder if the book kind of explains like why he was, you know, marooned out there in the sea. Maybe you don't need to explain it technically, you know, but like, was he a good guy? Was he a bad guy? What the heck? What, you know what I mean?
That is one of the things with the movie, because he is that character. I mean, I understand why. I mean, you could add to it and who knows what got cut and who got rewritten on the spot, what changed that day, who knows what happens. But going off this, I do see why someone like Kilmer would not. I mean, it's kind of a dick move to say I'm being this guy now, just to like strong arm the whole cast into that. But I do understand why he'd want to play the other character, because that almost is kind of like you know, it felt kind of like he was doing kind of like, yeah, a little bit of Brando, a little bit of his Jim Morrison, you know, like act, you know. So it was one of those things where watching this, that character, because he was just kind of there. He was just kind of like a blank slate who just kind of reacts. He hardly does anything. He just kind of stands there like, well, that's fucked up. And he just, maybe most he kind of, he's kind of like just scared and like looking around. And there's a few moments where he makes action, but it's more of just by the story calls for. And that's not me trying to talk too much shit. That's just the way the character, he was just very much just there, you know?
No, he's 100% an avatar character. Like, it's just supposed to be, that's you. That's you. Yeah. Generic slate. Boring. Yeah. Nobody even knows your past because you know why? Who the fuck cares? It's you. It's on the screen. You said you always wanted to be on the screen. We just put you up there.
Yeah. I mean, I think that maybe there, maybe in like an earlier version, like, or that could have been something else. Like he was like, you know, a drug runner or some shit like that. Just something kind of like add that extra level to it, or mm-hmm. maybe give him a little bit of extra, like, you know, like depth or like grit to it. But I mean, it's one of those things like, maybe in an earlier version, because it seems like the version that they were going to make before this movie was more focused on Moreau, and the castaway was more or less there just to answer, just to ask questions. But then as it went on, it became much more the castaway's movie.
Yeah, well, and I think what happened is because one, like Val Kilmer, the reason why he wanted the other slot is because he didn't want to work there. He wanted to work like half the amount of time. So he chose that character because he, you know, was greedy and lazy.
Plus, well, he also gets all the best scenes. Like, it's, well, there's some moments where he's just kind of there being quiet, but then there are other moments where he's like the star of the show. And in all honesty, I kind of could see watching him, I could see Val Kilmer playing either of those characters, but I do see him very much being the, like, I want to be the guy. Like, because I feel like in that situation, there would be that guy, just that total fucking Chad, who's walking with his shirt off, like, yeah, come get your shot right on, you know, like motorboats, like some, like, six-titted, like, fuck, some six-titted pig woman, like, all right, here you go. And, like, what, man, what? Like, I almost feel like that would be a guy there, and that would be played by someone like Val Kilmer, you know, kind of like this Tyler Durden-esque kind of like, I'm just here going with it, man. Chaos and fucking, that's what I'm here for. And then, like, but then I could also see him being the very kind of milquetoast, like, hero, like, what do you mean? What's this? Like, that kind of shit.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I mean, like, I'll say it, like, Val Kilmer does, like, kill all the scenes he's in. Like, that's the thing, is he's there to, yeah. I think that's what, I mean, he wanted one of those ones where he's like, I can just do what? I can just choose scenery and be as weird as possible and so on like that. Yeah, I'll take that role. That sounds like the one. I think that's what it sort of was, too. I think I get to work less and my role's not nearly as boring. Like, you know, I want to go the full distance on the bizarre, you know, one of those kind of things. Anyway, I mean, granted, this movie's only like an hour and a half, so you know that, like, this feels like this should be like a 2 hour long epic movie. And I know that they're just sort of, you know, piecing it together.
It probably,
I
mean, was at one point in time.
Yeah, because, you know, you got John Frankenheimer, who's like, you know, practically Frankenstein in it. He's Frankenheimering it all together like a mad doctor. You know, we haven't mentioned that dude, but yeah, they had to bring in an old director guy to be like, yo, get this like thing back together. You know what I mean? He's like, I can handle this. I've done a lot of movies in my day. Look at my hat. It's kind of cool. It makes me feel like I'm part of Australia, though I'm not.
What the fuck is that? Oh, it's a didgeridoo. Let me fucking break it, dude. This is a very important thing to my people. It's a very sacred. I don't give a shit. I want to break it.
Yeah, I just love how he just goes in there. He just might say, like, the typical. He's like that. He's like almost like the old guy dad who walks into like his son's, like, you know, D&D thing and just has this look like, what the fuck's going on here, guys? Why are they in these fucking costumes? This is fucking weird. Well, you got to kind of run this for the night. You know what I mean? Like, Tommy Stick and stuff like that. Like, this is what you fucking brought me here? It's like, well, we're going to pay you well. Oh, okay, then I'll figure a way out.
Like, Tommy's sick. You're all fucking sick. Look at you.
Look at you. Stop doing so much goddamn fucking drugs and fucking. Like, God, geez, people, what's wrong with you? And where's that director of the stupid hat? I'm going to go over there and slap the shit out of him for starting this thing.
Well, that's another thing, because that guy seemed like he just went there, like, he's just a guy rolled up his sleeves, just kind of like fresh out of the factory, just down over there, just being like, all right, like, just like, what are you fucking making? Which there's sometimes that, like, you kind of need that blue collar, like, thing to get through the shit. But then, like, he was just like a fucking dick to everybody on set, to all the cast people in the movie, ultimately, just for doing whatever the studio said. I'm a dick, Marsha. You're like, you know, he's like, fucking talking shit to the girl or whatever.
Oh, for Isabel.
Like, you're a fucking horrible actress. You're a stupid whore. You know, the whole fucking whatever. And then, like, and then you cut back to everybody being like, fuck that guy. I hope he's dead. Fuck that guy. And you go back to the New Line Cinema guy who hated Richard Stanton. Like, he was a good guy. I liked him. Yeah.
Yeah. He at least got the movie finished on time, and, you know, whatever. We made it through.
So, like, that, but that's also, like, I don't know, that's just, there's so many cues that gave me that guy just like, fuck that dude. I mean, he's a movie producer, so I expect that, or a studio head, so you expect that to some extent. But I do like the part when he was talking about, because at some part Marlon Brando was actively trying to, like, fuck with everybody, with the studio and the producers. And I do like what that guy's reaction, where he's like, Brando was pitching something the other day. Like, he's rewriting scenes on the fly. He's suggesting this. He thinks his character should always be hot and just not be ready for the heat. So he wants us, he held up production so we can make, like, a bucket hat to pour ice in for his character. All right. And then he had this guy that he was going to react with the whole time. Like, are you doing a line of coke right now?
Yeah, exactly. I'm getting the role for the movie.
I just saw you go down. All right.
Yeah, yeah, I had to be a part of, like, the whole experience.
he ends up going in and, like, he says, like, yeah, so Brando, like, there's also this other guy who's have all these lines, but Brando likes the smallest man in the world more, so he bounces all his lines off that guy instead, and the guy doesn't even talk back. So there's all my dialogue, okay. And then, like, and then this is like, apparently Brando had this moment where he says, like, I think it should be revealed that I take my mask off, and in fact, I'm a dolphin. He cuts to the producer or whatever. He's like, that's when I knew I had to make a call.
That's the thing, is like, all the stuff with, like, Marlon Brando, he's like, you almost can't believe, like, until you see it, you're like, one of those ones where if you went to explain it to somebody, you'd be like, dude, that wasn't Marlon Brando in the movie. Like, no, dude, there's literally a part where, like, he's playing fucking piano, like that scene in, you know, Austin Powers 2, and he's got the little fella on top playing the piano with him, just like Mini-Me, you know, practically doing, like, the, what if God was one of us? You know, it's like, you see all these things there, and you're like, oh, God, like, because I always knew that there's the South Park guy, Mephisto or whatever, in, like, the original seasons. And I knew that was always, yeah, I always knew that dude was based off of Marlon Brando from this movie. But, you know, like, all the weird experiments and so on, which you can totally see Trey Parker, Matt Stone watch this movie and go, what the serious fuck? Yeah. Let's put that guy in there, you know. But then it's like, I didn't put the 2 and 2 together. I was like, oh shit, this is where Mini-Me came from too.
Oh yeah, the guy was like, look, behold, my three-assed baboon, like that character from South Park.
But, yeah, exactly. That's pretty much what Marlon Brando's doing in this thing here. You know, he's just doing all his weird experiments and so on like that.
But then there's also the whole thing where he's like, I just like how much he was fucking holding shit up, and to the point of, like, where he's just like, not in the movie, but in the behind the movie, when Brando was just being kind of like, okay, so I think that, can we make him a small piano for me that while I play? Like, fuck! Just run up the room, just hear, like, hammers and nails and, like, some keyboards. Okay,
here
it goes.
Here we go. You know what I mean? Well, it's like, well, what's, I think, like, Marlon Brando, like, he took, like, he showed up, like, 2 weeks late to shoot, and then, like, when he got there, he had to, like, wait till he was ready You know, it's that stupid method acting. I have such mixed feelings about method acting. I like, it's like one of those ones, like, I'm not saying that there can't be good results, but like, it seems like everybody who does that method acting thing, like, they really are like, they're like a producer and a director's like nightmare if someone does method acting.
Well, I just thought there's like story of like it was, I think it was Malcolm McDowell or someone like him talking about how they saw like Daniel Day-Lewis, because he was like, he idolized some old school actor, some old school beloved actor. It's only like big actors now, you know. Mm-hmm. And he had a chance to work with him on like a stage play, and he was all so amped to see him work. Like, hey, how's it going? Comes in, he's like, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, he just tried a few accents, like, yeah, that's good, I got it. All right, cool, let's do this. Just goes out there, and Daniel Day-Lewis is like, the fuck, I was only using my foot to grab things for the last like 4 months and practicing like talking only half my face for this fucking movie. What the fuck? You know, this dude just was like, British. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, to me, it's like one of those ones. It's like, especially that old fashioned director saying, where it's like that one where, like, you know, he's like, okay, I want you to cross the street. The guy's like, well, what's my motivation for crossing the street? Because I fucking told you to cross the street. That's your fucking motivation. Now fucking cross the street. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those ones where it's just like, yeah, it's just like sometimes that stuff, it's like, I feel like that method acting, it's like a crutch. That's what I look at it like. It's like almost, if you can't just act with nothing, I almost kind of go like, it's a crutch that you need something. You know what I mean? You're equivalent of like somebody who's like, well, I can't put this together there unless I have like inspiration or something like that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I have to have this object, or, you know, I have to have this special device. Like, that's what it sort of feels like, you know, I can't do it like alone in a weird way. And so, and I'm not saying that there's, you know, of course there's definitely good results that come out of certain acting, things like that. You know, I mean, Steve McQueen did it as well too, but it just feels like so many times it's just like, just go up there and act. Like, go up there and act. But you can't imagine what this character is going to be like. It's like, it shouldn't be that hard. You know what I mean?
Well, it's also just, you see some plus sometimes you hear like some of the method acting people do, like that role was not worth that. Come on, dude. Come on. Yeah, sure, it was good, but it wasn't that, you know. And like, I'm thinking back on like Brando. I'm like, really? Because there is like, Brando's good, but he's basically, when he's old Brando at a certain point, he just kind of plays old Brando to a certain extent. And that's what he's kind of doing here. Just kind of like this, like, befuddled old man, like, oh, I tell you, oh, some sophistication, blah, 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 you know, like, and like, there's the part where, cause just go back to the movie for a second, like, as a horror film, how do you think it stands? You think it's more of like, I'd still consider it kind of like a horror, but more of kind of like a more psychological thriller kind of, to some extent, would you maybe?
Yeah. I mean, like, I would say it probably fits in, like, you know, in the broad genre of, you know, things, which I always say there's four core genres, and then everything sort of stems from those four: action, drama, comedy, and horror. Those are the four ones. You can pretty much sum up any movie into one of those categories there. I mean, a documentary would be, I guess, the fifth one, but beyond that, I'd probably say, yeah, like if I looked at it like that, it definitely is in that, but it's kind of like different, because it's more of a weird sort of like sci-fi, like it's horror,
sci-fi, but like drama with like dashes of horror.
Yeah. With like dashes of like mad scientist horror, because it does have like those Resident Evil vibes to it. Realistically, like, it definitely has like, oh, here's like these like, you know, laboratory and scientists. But it's not like the creatures are just like out like bloodthirsty and everything like that. It's more like it's like a revolution is what happens instead. So it's kind of fits more like the lines of like a turncoat kind of action film, more than necessarily like, you know what I mean? It's not like, you know, people are brought to this island and like the creatures feed on these people. It's not like, I feel like that would make it more feel horror like, where this one's more just it's really interesting sci-fi more than anything else.
Yeah, like, I still think you'd call this movie horror, and I think doing it during Halloween is still fitting, but at the exact same mm-hmm. time, it's more of, like, the body horror. Because there's the part when he first stumbles around, he's like, what the fuck's going on? And he's like, stay in the room. He gets out of the room, he's stumbling around, and then he wanders into, like, the laboratory, and he sees, like, some deformed, like, baby, like, mutant baby being born. The doctor is a dog man or something. There's another dog man. He runs outside. There's more like fucking freaks running around. He's like, what the shit? So there is like there is the, like, that moment where if you didn't know what you were watching, if you didn't know what Dr. Monroe was and you just walked in, like, what the fuck is this suddenly? You know what I mean? But then...
Yeah, well, also, it's definitely a creature feature. That is for sure.
Yeah. And then... But then, like, there's the part where he kind of keeps him at bay with the electricity. Because there's one of those things where Monroe's not, like, an evil person, but he is someone with a god complex and someone who definitely is not perfect. He's trying to be as perfect as he can, but he's definitely not. And that is, like, it's really his hubris that brings him down, because he's like, I don't really want to. We're not allowed to kill. We're not supposed to kill. But I do. If I have to shock him to keep him down, I will shock him to keep him down. But there's only a matter of time before they figure that out. And when they do figure it out, and they're all crowding around him in the piano room, like, that was a scene that I thought did a good job of building up the tension. Like, I'm surprised this movie's PG-13.
Yeah, well, it's one of those movies that's like, it's like that borderline PG-13. It reminded me of one of those ones, like, it probably, even the John Frankenheimer version, I bet you it sort of was shot R, and they sort of cut it, kind of like, we could trim this down to a PG-13. And I think they once again, when the movie was kind of done, they're like, fuck it, let's make it as safe as possible, do a PG-13, we'll get a wider release because of that, like, where probably the Richard Stanley version would have been a rated R one, if it went exactly how he wanted, because he wanted to have some of that stuff that would be very more dark and moody. And like, I really picture his being sort of a lot more like Resident Evil, you know, before, like, about that same time Resident Evil came out, but, like, literally that kind of style where, like, it gets progressively darker as it goes inside, and we're seeing, like, oh, there's all these experiments and all these creatures and so on like that. And, it would probably be more like that, you know, where this one is, yeah, it's pulled back just enough, but not like a PG-13 in a bad way. There's so much interesting stuff in there, and there's, you know, still all kinds of, like, weird things you would normally not expect to see in a PG-13 movie.
Yeah, but even, like, going off what you said about it being kind of like kind of Resident Evil as it goes on, it feels kind of like, in that way, his version, I think, would have been a little bit more Resident Evil-ish, like, with more, of course, Apocalypse Now inspiration, you know, just that more, like, kind of down and dirty, kind of like bohemian, you know, doomsday prepper kind of vibe type thing. And I think that with this, it's how do I put it? Like, there's the part, there's a scene when, like, the girl dies, and I'm surprised the PG-13 version did that. Like, oh wow, you guys went there. I'm surprised the PG-13 version would have the guts to do it. And then, you know, she dies, and it's not like, I mean, it sucks that. But it's not the worst way to go, because they talk about how she was going to die originally, and that is with the dog people catch her, and they kill her, and they slice her up and chop her up, and they feed her, and they cook her, and they give her to, like, Monroe, and he realizes what happens to the dogs. That, you know, something about dogs is they do have short memories, so they don't remember that what they cooked, what they did, so they're confused why their master they love is killing them, and just in a fit of rage. So it's one of those things, like, that probably would have been a hard scene to watch, but goddamn, that's like some fucking balls. I guarantee you, as soon as they got, like, because, you know, at some point, like, one of the dudes from, like, the dude from the Wild Bunch was on the script for this, and
when they said that, like, that seemed like a weird choice. Like, let's get the Wild Bunch guy in. How old is this guy now? I don't know. He'll figure out something for us.
But that's something, like, that is, like, an interesting choice. And at the same time, because I know that Wild Bunch is one of my favorite movies, so I don't. But regardless, I don't have that dude's name off the top of my head.
I think I know he's right here on.
Yeah, he's worked on.
I think it's Ron Hutchinson, I'm assuming, because he's the other screenplay writer on there other than Richard Stanley.
Yeah.
I mean, I could click it and see what he is. He'll probably say Wild Bunch right off the bat.
Well, of course, that on this thing, maybe there's more than one writer on the first, because I see three writers, like Ron.
No, it's not him, because this guy's career starts in 77.
Okay, well, I don't know. Maybe there's another Wild Bunch. Maybe there's another Wild Bunch that came out after the 69 one. So,
no, I know it was a Sam Peckinpah, because they mentioned that in the documentary.
Okay. Well, maybe he's an uncredited writer or something to that effect. But regardless, maybe he did punch up on it or something. Who knows? like, I think... I think there is a lot of places you can go with that, but I guarantee you, whenever they when they started like trimming scenes for the script, like, what are we going to shoot? Like, that is one of the first things you're like, no, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah, well, because like the way they kind of do it, they almost do have this sort of like, because I even thought when I was watching the movie, because I went movie first, then documentary second, and yeah, because they end up hanging for as a bulk right there, but they do it kind of like off screen, so you just see the shadow effect kind of go on. So it's almost a very like indie film style, like what they went with to save some money and make it kind of. And all I thought was like, I'm like, I bet you anything that would that scene was supposed to be much more violent. I don't know how it could have gone many different ways. It could have been like, you know, tearing them up like that, but I also like that could have been a really weird rape scene too. Also, I feel like depending on like how they want to go about it and how primal you want to make this movie go, because that's like the thing is like as this movie goes on, all everybody just starts to like break into like Marlon Brando's like kind of like, you know, hold on it, because it's almost like he's got like a bunch of like 10-year-old children, and then they turn like 13 in a sense, and they all go fucking wild and insane.
Goes Woodstock 99 real fucking quick.
Yeah, it really does. You know, they see Red Hot Chili Peppers for the first time and they can't handle themselves.
Like, and that's where he's just like, Monroe's like, oh, I was trying to go with the original Woodstock. I wasn't thinking this one. Shit.
Even though that has peace and love, everybody, peace and love and veganism. Oh, no, no, don't eat that.
Oh, Blair and a Limp Bizkit. I could see it being something to the effect of like, yeah, because that does seem like, okay, just put this dummy out there, throw it out there, and we're just gonna have a cat meow, you know, be like, yeah, you know, noise. But I could also see it being something like she probably went not as far as what Richard Stanley wanted to do the first time, but as far as maybe as violent as like Monroe, because even though you can't see it all of Monroe, it is violent, because you see all these dog, all these like predator beastmen attack him all at once, biting into the side of his neck and just like going down, and you're like flying shit up. At some point you see him like throw an arm up, and you know, so it's like, I imagine it was probably something kind of like that. Like I bet like, I'm not sure if Stanley was fired by that point, but I bet like whenever they got to shoot like Brando's death, if it was the other guy, he was like, fuck yeah. He's probably just like full on, just like this close to just jacking it right there. Like, now rip the organs out, rip the organs out. You realize we're not going to use any of that. They're going for PG-13. Now. I don't give a shit. Do it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't think Richard Stanley really shot anything in that movie. I think that movie is pretty much all John Frankenheimer, because it seemed like he was almost like tossed out before they really got anything except for maybe initial couple shots. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems like they were there for like all like pre-production stuff, and he was almost tossed out by about that point. Like, you know, maybe there's a few things, but I'm pretty sure that movie's like 95% plus John Frankenheimer.
Yeah, probably something to that effect. Because I know he didn't shoot very, very much before they got into it. So, but yeah, but yeah, I think it's one of those movies that like, I think it's. Oh, shoot, first, before you say, when it goes more shithouse crazy at the end, where all the animals just like, no rules, fucking party, do what you want, fuck what you want, eat what you want, do whatever. And then, like, you know, Val Kilmer's coming down, like, in an elevator in a rave. He's got, like, fucking, like, Beast Woman, like, dragging up against them. He's like, fuck it, what else am I gonna do here, you know?
Well, there's even a scene that's like early on, because you see the progressive weirdness of Val Kilmer's character. Like, he seems like the normal guy at first, but as time goes on, he gets more and more bizarre and so on like that. And he gets to that point where he's like, oh yeah, you know what we do? We shoot him up with a bunch of acid and whatnot, makes him fucking docile, and calms him out a bit, you know? And so it's just like all this stuff. And it's almost like, he's like, yeah, I shoot myself up too, because it's fucking awesome. Here, take this joint.
Yeah, and then there's also the part where he's just like looking for this. Like, that just seems like such a like on the spot thing. He's like, are you looking for this? And he's just wearing like the motherboard computer chip thing on his forehead, and he's just like, you know, the director's just like, that was not in the script, but I'm not even gonna just go. Yeah,
not worth a retake. Yeah, well, those. Well, there's even a part two. I think they were talking about the beginning, and I think it might have been still when Val Kilmer was the other guy, and they were talking about his intro or whatever and stuff like that. And Val's like, you know, I don't know about that, man. Sounds pretty fucking stupid. like he just said it like mid-cigarette puff.
Well, it's also something.
I just did Batman Forever, so you can't have me doing anything dumb.
Well, it's also the point where he comes in, he's all like, well, there's the guy who was going to be the assistant to Monroe, whose part got smaller and smaller. And he was like a German dude. And he goes in there, he says like, hey, I saw you in the movie Europa. You're really good. Oh, thanks, man. Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. By the way, if it's going to be between any of us on this film, it's going to be between the two of us. Between two of us, it's going to be me. He just walks out like, all right, I was getting dog makeup on my fucking face. I don't know what he wanted me to say there. And then there's a part where like Brando, like he's just like, oh, so you're the German actor. Like, oh yes, I'm the German actor. This is the last time I ever spoke to Brando. And he says like, and he said something to me. Like, what? Like, I heard cat and day in there. So I think you're trying to say cat on a hot tin roof. I'm like, no, I think he's like, no, wow. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Like, no,
you don't speak German.
And then he's just like, and then he says like, then he says like the gibberish to like the lip to the smallest man in the world. And then he's like, yeah, cool, whatever. And he's like, I like this guy. And from that moment on, he was his best friend. So maybe if I just like, yeah, totally, I would be, I'd be his best friend.
Yeah, that was like the thing. It was just like the test. This dude almost looked like he was like a stand-in for Cary Elwes. That's what I sort of thought when I was looking at this guy. I'm like, that's who this guy looks like he could have been.
Who's Cary Elwes again?
Robin Hood and Men in Tights.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Didn't he kind of have that look? Because I was like, has that look and so on. But yeah, I just love how Marlon Brando just like, yeah, just he almost like he just reminds me like he sort of talked like he was like Jesse Ventura, like, what, you don't know, like, what, you are an idiot? Like, no, I wasn't born then. Like, I don't know how you expect me to know all this stuff. Like, that's how Marlon Brando sort of came across. Like you know, like,
you don't know German perfectly. I just fucking made up. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he was literally like Brad Pitt's character in Glorious Bastards. Like, and I speak German the best out of everybody.
So it's like one of those things where, I'll be honest. I mean, I think the documentary is more interesting than the actual final movie. But if we got the movie the dude wanted to make, I think we would have like this crazy, bizarre, what the fuck kind of movie. But I mean, I guess maybe because by this point, like, I think when this movie came out, it probably would have been a crazy, bizarre, what the fuck. But I think a lot of things since then have, I don't know, I think I've seen weirder, crazier things other than this movie since then. But I mean, for the time though, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's still pretty weird. There's still stuff in there that I feel like shocking in like different way. I'm not saying that shocking doesn't always have to be like pure violence or anything like that. But like,
yeah, I didn't mean,
for example, it's just look at the little fella, like the makeup that they give him at some points and something like that. That's fucking weird. Like, dude, it's like,
yeah,
he's got that one where he's like the big stomach and he's like all like morphed and weird and his penis is hanging out and so on. You're like, what the fuck is, like, there's some stuff in there that's like, it's just bizarre choices. And like, I think that's what makes it interesting. And just, yeah, just the Marlon Brando-ness of it is just, you know what I mean? Like, I don't imagine anybody else want to do weird stuff like that. Like, put the KFC bucket on my head and pour some ice into me, you know?
No, wrong. I'm not saying it's not nothing. I'm not saying it's not nothing. I'm not saying it isn't weird. I'm just saying,
yeah.
I think it's to the degree of, like, I think I've seen weird shit by this point. By the time when it came out, it had to be like, dude, what the fuck are you doing here? And I think there's also that point of, like, trying to walk that line of making, well, I mean, I guess it's kind of like, it is kind of like Apocalypse Now. It was this total shit show, because everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. Because like before the shooting of the movie, Brando's daughter died or committed suicide, and then before that there's a big tsunami which wiped everything out, and then they kept on like micromanaging and really hounding Richard Stanley about every little thing in this situation when he wanted to make a smaller movie in the first place. And then Val Kilmer came in and just was the biggest dick to everybody on set and the crew. And at some point in time, it was gonna be Bruce Willis, James Woods, and Bruce Willis is the main character. James Woods is the assistant. And then was Brando still Monroe?
I think Brando was still in that variation, because that was like the initial variation. And then like Bruce Willis just got a divorce with Demi Moore. And then so he's like, ah, oh, fuck it, I'm out of here. You know, yeah. and then they're like, let's get Val Kilmer. And then Val Kilmer's like, get out of here, James Woods.
Yeah. And then, look, I'm just imagining like James Woods would have been just walking around shirtless, just being kind of like, hey, guys. Yeah. You know, just
like, yeah.
just playing it like Hades from Hercules still.
Yeah, exactly. You know, well, it's one of those ones, like, I think the movie itself, I still really actually enjoyed it much more than I even thought I would. Like, I mean, I liked it a lot. But it's one of those films, it's a perfect example of one that, like, I would love to see somebody else give a fourth stab to this, or yeah. a fifth or sixth. I think there's a couple other, like, sort of, like, knockoff movies that are kind of made along the way. But this feels like, I think it's the third kind of, like, somewhat official version of it. But it is one of those ones, mainly because also, too, even though the book's really short, the book's under 200 pages, so realistically, by that standard, there's probably not more than 2 hours worth of content even in the book, you know, necessarily. But it would be interesting to see someone give it a take. I almost feel like it would be kind of interesting too, because I think that book's written in like 1898 or something like that. It would almost be kind of cool to give it a period piece feel too, like it was 1898 or whatever that, you know, that was, you know, and just really, because this one they were giving it like a modern feel, which is nothing wrong with that, and they had those cool drawings. That was one that I will say Richard Stanley did have all this like sweet artwork that he paid for somebody else to do, that's, you know, where they just had these cool, like, you know, bizarre scenes and gory effects and like these monsters kind of being integrated into society. And then there's that one where, like, Dr. Monroe kind of looks more like Jesus and everything like that.
Well, there's also something to the point of, like, he was trying to make it very on the nose with the biblical stuff. Because apparently in the book, it's not that Monroe is a bad... Apparently, I haven't read it. But apparently he's not that he's a bad guy. He's just a guy who's trying to create life. And out of that... it backfires and he can't control it. And at some point they turn on him and it's just society is what society is. And you can't really, one man can't control it. And that's kind of what he was going to treat Moreau. And Moreau was going to be the main character, and he was going to have his death was supposed to be more like a Christ-like death, being dragged away and tortured in the middle of like this, like, fucking party where all these beast people got a hold of drugs and alcohol and they were fighting and fucking and eating each other and all this crazy shit going yeah. on while like the half the island was on fire. So, and then he is just being like, whether it be crucified or damn near crucified, you know, just some kind of like death like that. And I think that would have just been one of the probably craziest fucking movies ever made. It's something we'd still be talking about today if that happened. Now, I'm not saying, I'm not going to totally bring it down, because a studio in the 90s, I'm not sure if they like, look, Pulp Fiction came out. We don't get it, but other people get it. So, okay, cool. But this thing, you want to have orgies of animal people. Like, I'm still surprised, like, the fucking beginning of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas happened, where they show, like, the lizard people, and they have, like, a vision of, like, the lizard people in Las Vegas, and they're, like, having orgies and acting all, like, well, I'm surprised that fucking happened, you know? So, that times 10 with, like, a crucifixion scene?
Yeah. No, that's what I mean, is this movie has that potential to have a really awesome version. The downfall is like, that 96 would have been the most ideal time period, because you don't have to have the CG. That's the downfall nowadays, is that, you know, they would make everything CG or the majority of it CG, and it would lose its mystique because of that. And, you know, this thing needs to definitely be 100% like prosthetics and creature effects and all that kind of stuff. I mean, this movie has Stan Winston's team involved in it and so on like that. So, like, that's why you're getting such cool looking monsters and everything like that. That's the thing, is it'd be a tough one to make nowadays, but if you had the right director who actually had that passion for making old school cinema, I think that it's definitely one of those ones that I would like to see more like stuff of this, you know, even if it was in other medias too. I always kind of thought too, I'm like, I know they showed that there was, of course, like a 70s Marvel Comics one of this, but I kind of wonder, I'm like, this might as well as ones if you'd found like some Dynamite or something like that would have some kind of cool version of, like, you know, based off the book, but here's the comic book version for you because you don't want to read, you know?
Yeah. Well, I do think it's something we mentioned, forgot to mention in the documentary. Richard Stanley is doing, like, because he's a really out there dude, and he's like, I have a friend who's involved, and he says it all so casually, I have a friend who's involved in witchcraft. He performed a spell for me, and he's going on, and he says, like, well, as it turns out, the night everything went bad, that's also the night my friend who performed the spell had a horrible accident and his fam was in the hand he did this spell with because he cut himself with a curved dagger. It's like he was infected and all these things. And like, and I have a friend, I have a mother, my mother's friend lives in Ireland. And for some reason she saw Haida. There's a Haida in my movie. What is going on? Is this a sign? This crazy ass shit.
Well, because he's like that guy that was kind of like, you know, he's in that same, you know, I guess it's almost like he's going for the weird, like mysterious director kind of thing. Almost no different than what's his name of Ed Wood, talking Batman,
Tim Burton.
Tim Burton. I don't know why I was drawing a blank on that, but yeah, like he's almost kind of going in that kind of thing, and that's probably why he sort of got chosen. He's like, oh, he's kind of like seems like another Tim Burton guy. Maybe you know, like we can, you know, that guy made us a lot of money. Let's see if we can get this weirdo to do that too. You know, and then like as he gets old, he kind of almost has like a weird, almost like Robert Rodriguez look too. He looks like knockoff Robert Rodriguez, even though I know he came before Robert Rodriguez. But
I just like the idea though. They're just like, look at these fucking goths and their trench coats. I mean, I fucking hate them, but they make us money. So
yeah,
bring them in. Don't let them get too within arm's length of me because I just might strangle them because I hate the creative. But at the exact same time, they make money. So. Sure, just keep him on a fucking leash. And then, something about Burton, though, because I feel like Burton and this guy would hang out, and Burton's like, this guy's cool. And then after a while, like, this guy's too fucking out there. This guy actually, he believes in witchcraft shit. I like to make silly cartoons with, like, stripes and put Johnny Depp in silly hats. You know, this guy's calling the devil to make this movie happen.
Yeah, exactly. As I said, like this, those other two movies he has look so interesting. Like I'm like one of those ones. Like I am very interested to see what this guy does because the weird thing is after this movie, like he totally was like, "Fuck it, Hollywood sucks." You it's like one of those ones. Like, why don't you go do independent movies again? No, that sounds dumb. I'm gonna go walk in the mountains for a while. Like we're. You know, it's like, oh,
well, if
okay.
He wants to do that, if he, I mean, he looks like he got by on whatever he is. Cause he looks like he has a nice.
Yeah, well, he must. Well, he still got that big fat paycheck though, because they had to pay him fully just to get the hell out of here. And then that's actually the other interesting thing too is that later on, he was supposed to get on a plane, and then like he didn't get on the plane. They're like, well, where'd he fucking go? Hey, fuck it, who cares? Let's just keep shooting this movie. And then they realize it's like, dude, he's been like just like living out in Australia and Queensland area or whatnot. And then like one of the other like I think it was like a. PA or something like that. It's like, dude, why don't you just come to the set? Because he's like, well, I kind of want to see what it looks like. He's like, but I don't want to lose my paycheck. You know, we'll just put this dog mask on and we'll just sneak you in. And then so he's just walking around in scenes in the background.
Well, I do think it's funny because like it wasn't like he didn't call him up. They're just like on a hike one day and they're going down a river. And they're like, is that the fucking director? Like, yeah. Like, what are you doing here? Oh, there's just like a house. I'm just chilling with this guy. And he has a bathtub by the river. I was getting ready to take a bath. All right. you want to come see the movie? Like, well, I'll lose my paycheck. Like, have we got a dog mask for you? I'm like, cool. Like, and I like how the two guys are talking about that. They're so like, oh, just come on down. It's not a big deal. Like, just those two like Aussie dudes possible. Just kind of be like, all right, yeah. I mean, we can get fired. You can get fired. You lost. We turned around, but want to see what it looks like? Yeah, okay. Oh, all right, come along. Get in the ute. You
know? Yeah. Yo, we're going down. It's gonna be amazing. Well, that one guy was like, he's like, yeah, I'll go fired 3 times. I went through 3 different draws, but they just kept hiring me back because in Australia, who are you going to get?
And the other guy's like, yeah, he did. He's just like,
and then John Frankenheimer's all like, oh, these fucking Aussies. I thought we defeated them in World War II. That's not them. Oh, well, we should have. Well, I have the deal of all these guys and their jibbity doobities. You know what I mean? Like, they won't let me fucking break over their head like fucking El Kabong.
I just like to imagine he sees one like just like a straight performer. He's just running over to them like, no, hide it, hide it.
He's got such hatred for like, you know, ethnic like musical instruments.
Do not let him get anywhere near a Peruvian flute band.
Yeah, he's gonna Frankenheimer them up, but yeah, no, that's like one of the most interesting things. Just like, yeah, Richard Stanley's just going around. And I like what that one dude said. He's like, man, it was hot as fucking balls out and everything like that. I'm like, I was trying to make sure that we took breaks and all. You got all the actors that were in costume and you'll get water, you know. And they're taking their masks off, and there's just this one guy who never took his mask off. I'm like, that guy's gonna die on set. What is this guy, a maniac? Why is he so committed?
And he'd also put, like, he was putting on a weird accent, like, so we wouldn't recognize his voice. So he'd come up and say, like, "Hey, good work. I saw you out there." And all right. I'm like, fuck, what's that accent? You know, it wasn't an Australian. You know? Australian wasn't British. He was just putting on some weird accent so he couldn't pinpoint him. And then, like, that, it was also funny when you hear about some of the Beast people and some of the crew people, like, how they were just like, "Yeah, we were staying up in a hotel and it was just constantly a party. You know, we were all, like, stressed out. So when we went back, we partied. He bought a video game system. He bought a racetrack, you know, a little, like
you think they're like, we're getting paid so good that we just started blowing money.
And they're just like the lady who played, like, the pig lady. She's like, I smoked a lot of pot and had a lot of sex. A lot of sex and a lot of..."
Okay, yeah, it was like, yeah, with the racetrack and everything, we're doing competitions. Yeah, just like, they just got more and more, like, they became like the animals themselves. That was, like, the kind of the ironic thing in it. It was like, they were literally method acting as time went on.
Like, I mean, that's got to be a bonding experience. You got to be like, you got to be being like some of the people paid the least on set, and then you see, like, fucking Val Kilmer holding everything up, because I'm not coming out till Brando comes out, and that vice versa, and you're all sitting out there in costumes like, fuck this guy. And then, you know, like, oh dude, we got this cool, like, artsy, you know, witchcrafty guy who has a vision. We're part of that vision. That's cool. Oh, he's gone. Hey, you fucking dirty hippies, get the fuck out here. Like, oh, we got this guy we're dealing with now. And, like, so that's got to be a real bonding experience for those people. You know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if a couple of them were still friends.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and they were getting paid good, because I think that was the thing they said. They're like, yeah, our per diems were fucking huge, so we just had all this money to blow every day.
I hope you get paid after all that shit.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's the thing. The money was just, I think, being tossed around for that movie, and nobody just had any real idea what the hell was going on, you know. And yeah, just, you know, chaos among the Americans, pretty much. But, you know, the rest of them are just like, yeah, whatever, let's just go, this is what we're doing. And see, that's the other thing too. I feel like that's like that kind of stuff, like, that's like that last generation of time period where people could just be ridiculous like that. Because nowadays it'd be like, that happened, to be like, oh, you guys are fired, we're getting some union workers, get out of here, you Australians.
Well, I could also see it being something to the effect of like, like, I'm just imagining just like all these Australians being like, yeah, gig's a gig, man. I'm just coming in. I just do some stage plays every so often. And then this happened, you know, just coming in. And, like, you know, some people don't even do acting. They just, you know, had an opportunity. Like, all right, let's do this. And, you know, and then here comes, like, the most stereotypical American producers, most stereotypical American director, most stereotypical, like, American movie stars just doing this shit. They're like, fuck it, we're getting paid.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. It's just like, oh, whatever, you know, gig's a gig, you know. That's like the ones, like, for those kind of guys, too. It's like, yeah, whatever, the money's coming in. Who cares what you have to do? It's not my problem. You know, at the end of the day, even if the movie doesn't get finished, big whoop, it's like, it's not my money riding on the line.
I got lots of pussy and a race car track.
Yeah, exactly. But, but yeah, that whole movie just in itself, it's just weird because it's like that Richard Stanley guy. It'd be interesting to see if he would make movies again, because it's just one of those ones, like, he seems like one of those kind of guys that he should have just, you know, taken a break and just said, fuck it, let me just go back to the indie circuit. I think that's where I'm supposed to be at. I'm not supposed to be a, you know, a major Hollywood player kind of guy, you know, and just go with it for like that, you know, and not become that person who just becomes so jaded and bitter towards, like, the system because of one incident.
Let's be honest, though. I mean, it is one of those things, like, he was blamed for every little thing. So I understand why he would be jaded for that, but I'm not sure how much that follows you into the indie circuit. Who knows? Maybe he did try. Maybe he couldn't. Who knows? You know, because you see a lot of stories about, like, these directors. They did one or two indie movies. They do something big. It flops. And then maybe they're just doing, like, straight to video movies or episodes for TV. Not that that's bad, but it's also maybe, like, I don't know, it kind of happened. They're the ones where people do escape and they kind of just go back to the indie circuit and they get around. But who knows, I'm not sure how much that followed him or how much of, like, because watching it, it's not like a really bad movie. I don't even, like, really, if it was so bad, it's not his version that got made.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, it's kind of weird because you would never even know his name's not even in the credits except for the screenplay part. So it's like the average Joe doesn't know anything about that guy. You know what I mean? Like, if you just watch the movie, it's John Frankenheimer. That's the only name you see. Nobody thinks anything of it. So it's such kind of a bizarre. I think he just, because, well, he said in the movie that he just said, like, no, I was just done. That's it. I don't want to, you know what I mean? Like, done. Like, I don't think he tried. I think, because that was the thing Fruza Bulk even said. She's like, man, I ran into the dude. He even, like, shaved his head and everything like that. And he was just out there. And it's just like, well, that's kind of weird. It's like, are you going to try it again? No. And I'm just going to go live in the mountains, you know? I mean, like, wrong, if that's what you want to do, I do. But, like, yeah, I did feel it's like one of those ones, like, I feel like, especially even nowadays, too, like, especially after that documentary, I can't believe there's not somebody out there be like, dude, let's give this guy another shot. Like, you know, like, he made two really interesting movies at first. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
They don't have to be a major motion picture. It could literally be an indie film. It could be a straight to DVD type thing. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, anything, you know.
Yeah, I get you. I just think it's also one of those things. Maybe after that, he's like, you know what? I want to write poetry and live in the mountains. He might be just one of those guys. Like I said, I had three movies in me. I made two of those movies. The third one didn't happen. Is what it is. I'm just gonna go. Gonna be like Kang in Kung Fu. Go where the wind takes me. And I'm going to French mountains where they made their last stand. And like, all right, cool. All right, yeah.
Well, and he probably got a big fat paycheck too from like the movie. So like he pretty much. Those are those many things. If you play your cards right, you can live for the rest of your life off that, you know, as long as you don't blow your money, you can live forever on like, a couple $1 million. So
just bought a nice house and living off the land maybe. So, yeah. I still think it's either way, even though I would have liked to see his version. I still like the movie that came out. There is like some choppiness to it and there is some stapled together aspects to it, but at the same time I don't think it's by zero means like the worst movie ever made. I don't know where that gets off. That just seems more like Hollywood, like gossipy bullshit, that kind of thing, like, oh well, didn't do this much and I heard that that got the first director is a fucking freak, worst movie ever, one of those
yeah movies. I feel if you say that, I hate to sort of say it, but you're a fucking idiot. Like, no, that's not saying that like you can't personally dislike a movie, but if you say that that's the worst movie ever made, you obviously never watched any movies. That's all I gotta say. It's like I could find you 10,000 movies that are way worse than that. And that movie I actually think is actually legitimately pretty good. Like, you know, it's not perfect. It is kind of Frankenheimer together, but like, you know, it still was like way interesting. Still some really cool stuff in there. I think it's just one of those. It's one of the many things. It's like that dumb thing that, like, if a movie doesn't make money, it's like the Waterworld thing. That's what it kind of actually reminded me, because Waterworld's right at that same time period. And Waterworld, even though Waterworld made money, it's just the ironic part, but, like, since it didn't make money fast enough, they're like, it didn't make money. It's a terrible movie. It's not good at all. Kevin Costner's a terrible actor. Water is stupid. And you're like, that's not logical things. Yeah, but there's no money made, so it's not good. No money, no good. And you're like, sometimes it's like one of those ones, like, how did you get this job? That's all I want to know. How did you get this far up the ladder? Because obviously it shows that it takes no skill and no talent to get that far up there. You know what I mean? Like, how many dudes did you blow to get to this point? You know, where are we at? Like, you know what I mean? But yeah, it's so weird that like, and I think people like, they like to say that because it's the clickbaity headline type stuff. You know, if you put in the Hollywood Reporter, worst movie ever made, people are going to like, well, I got to see what this article says. They totally buy into it. So that's what it is. It's old school style negative press, the, you know, to sell more copies of your stupid magazine or newsletter or whatever the hell you have.
I don't want to sound like a little like artsy film snob, but it's even like, I mean, I think we all probably have a couple of most, I mean, I don't like have like a written down list, but I think we all, if you think about it, we have a couple of our most hated movies ever. And my most hated movies ever are never like a bad movie that it's never a bad movie that was like amateurly made. It's like a full budget like major motion picture that had every reason to be good but fucking sucked ass, like you know, like where they didn't give a shit about what they're making, or they were following a trend and didn't really there was no soul to the film. You know what I mean? And that's of course subjective, but that's always the worst movie to me. It's never, and this is a movie that clearly, regardless of like how much of his vision is left over, it's clearly a movie that had a vision and had like, was trying to do something different.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like a lot of times I always feel like whatever, like the movies that you dislike the most, it's always like a personal thing. Like, 'cause it's like, just be, you know, if I dislike a movie, it doesn't mean somebody else might not love it, and vice versa. Because I've known that many times when I say that I really like a movie, there's amazing how many times people will throw stones at me like I'm the fucking asshole because I like a movie. I like it. I didn't even say I disliked it. I like a movie, and people are like, oh, that's fucking stupid. And you're like, oh.
I guess my three, I mean, I'm just saying off the top of my head, like I don't have them like top 15 ready to go. Can't watch Mojo Countdown. But I guess if I had my three most hated movies, just to give some context of what I mean by this, it's like Day After Tomorrow, just because it's just up by the numbers, like global warming. We just learned about global warming. So we got to make a movie about global warming and scary. And none of all the characters are fucking flat. And it's going to be like, you know, like 10 minutes of CG. The rest of us is just huddled around like a fucking fire and running away from the cold. And people are going to laugh at global warming because of this fucking movie and not take it seriously for the next 10 years because of this fucking movie. Now, I'm not putting it all on this fucking movie, but it's like, good job to make something really serious and make it into a stupid fucking monster movie. Okay, whatever. And then there's Dragon Ball Evolution, which is like no one gave a fuck about what they're. I mean, I believe actors or maybe crew members gave a fuck, but I don't need to go into that one. And then
not even Chow Yun Fat could save it.
Not even Chow Yun Fat, you know. And I believe Chow Yun Pat was putting his all in that. And then Project X, which was another like kind of like
wasn't that the drinking movie where they're like, this is the same party.
It was like a found footage movie, but it's where they had all these found footage movies about like, you know, like horror movie situations or something, science fiction situations or whatever. Like, we're gonna do a found footage movie, but it's like super bad, but like found footage and girls gone wild and you know, it's just like this biggest party gets out of control and these three fucking nerds are doing a fucking video on it and you go, oh my god, it's a game changer party, bro. It's like one of the worst movies I've ever fucking seen. It's like those are movies that like had all the resources to make something, maybe not like the greatest movie of all time, but had the resources to at least be good, but they trend chase, and this thing is not trend chasing, and this thing does have a vision. So that's why there's no way this movie, in my opinion, could be one of the worst movies ever.
Yeah, and it's weird because that movie, I'll say the concept's not god awful. Like, it actually is kind of an interesting, just like but I feel like it just depends how you go about it. But the idea of like, oh, you could I see where someone would go, ah, that's actually interesting. Nobody's ever done something like that before.
Oh, you mean like what are you talking about?
I mean, it's about like oh, you just do it sort of found footage, but it's like, oh, you know, at a party and so on like that. Like, concept wise, just that element alone is like, okay, nobody's ever done that. Like, I will say it is original by that standard. But this, the movie itself just sounded like just kind of like
almost like a Girls Gone Wild slash someone's bullshit like go cam at a party combined with stapled together with like dumb gags and then like three knockoff nerds
from
like
super bad
being like, whoa, what the fucking whole time, and then like, oh, look, a girl's tits again, okay, cool,
yeah,
I like that, but it's not like it's not gonna save this fucking movie.
So that's what I mean. It's like, I feel like that's one of those ones. Take that same concept, but give it to somebody who could like make an actual shit. Like I'll just say someone like Kevin Smith. Like, if it was like a Kevin Smith character's party and just have me a found footage version, it'd be kind of weird. But like, I think if you had more interesting style, like that kind of stuff, and it wasn't just so like just doing like, let's just slap like three different genres of stuff together. You know, like, it was also one of those ones, like, say, like, Randall was fucking carrying a camera around, and, like, it's a weird, bizarre movie, but I'm just saying, like, and he was just filming shit, and you were getting it from, like, the Randall, like, point of view the whole time. That could be kind of interesting.
I guess it could be, but I saw the movie, and it felt like they just saw, like,
their... Yeah, I'm not talking about that movie. I'm talking about concept. Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I see what you mean.
But yeah, Dr. Violet Moreau, I think that's one of those ones, like, I think that's a well worth watch movie for any like sci-fi horror fan. Like, I think that's one of those ones, like, that movie almost needs to have that revisited kind of thing where it's like, no, rewatch it again, because I think everybody got kind of confused, and I think, you know, like, yeah, they it's one of those movies where I think people just didn't get it when it came out, and people just believe, because that's still that era where like fucking stupid fucking, you know, critics like Siskel and Ebert, those fucking douchebags, like, where they still could like bomb a movie just because their fat fingers felt like they had the power, you know, and all that kind of stuff. You know, that's always funny. When, like,
just like,
yeah,
just look at it. Like, they're looking up to, like, the Roman Emperor's box, and there's Siskel and Ebert with, like, the Reeves around their heads being like,
yeah. My favorite one of that, like, that is, like, I love when, like, Roger Ebert was like, you know, like, video games are not art. And then everybody was like, right when the internet came out, so everybody's like, well, you know what? Screw you, Ebert, you fucking gay faggot. Like, they're like, hey, guys, stop that. Yeah, you're probably going to die from AIDS. Look at you. Because it was, like, that time period where people just yell that stuff out. And they went hard on him when they called video games not art and so on like that. Whereas, like, I don't think he expected that to happen. like you know fucking art, you fat piece of shit. Go eat another sandwich.
Like, he was just like, well, people like to hear my words so much on my show. What's this? A venue to anybody. Hey, everyone, I got some ideas.
Yeah. And, man, they went hard on him. I can't remember what book. I think it was like that. It was like maybe it was in the Mortal Kombat, like, history book that I read. It was in one of those ones. It could have been another video game history one. I've gone through a lot of them by this point, but I just thought, like, I mean, it was like when he was, like, towards, like, the end of his life and he had cancer, so of course people are like, fuck you up, that cancer kills you. Because it's just a bunch of, like, 17-year-old people being like, with, like, no, like, you know what, guys, he's an ass, but, you know, can't be that mean. It's like, no, fuck him. I'm 16 years old. I'm gonna tell him who's a fucking man.
Which, it's kind of the thing about that is, like, because, you know, he at one point in time was to be the edgier, more, like, surprisingly, people would think of him as the well-rounded guy because he was somebody who did, like, schlocky action movies and schlocky horror films, and he didn't mind movies with violence. For a lot of critics of his time, hate that shit on at the spot, but there'd be ones where he really liked it and saw, like, there's a little bit more to it than that. And then he became the old man of, like, listen here, kids, like, oh, fuck.
no, yeah, he went kind of hardcore in that way and so on. But like, I guess, you know, bound to happen at some point. Even when you are, like, the edgy guy, you're eventually going to shift positions and then become the guy that everyone hates. But
we'll be, assuming this podcast goes on for another, like, however long. We might just be the outdated fucks at some point. You know, like,
yeah.
But I don't think, what's wrong with these people becoming friends with their clones? You know, your clone is there for your organs. It's not your friend. Don't get used to your friend. No, fuck you. Fuck you. Go out and make a real friend. Don't befriend your fucking clone. You're too afraid to go outside.
Yeah, just you and your six clones jerking off and, you know, around each other, like Bukkake style. Yeah, one of those ones. But no, I think the key thing is no, you just got to kind of stay positive and look at the movies as best as you can. And it's okay to not like something, but just don't try to, like, I feel like you just don't want to try to bend everybody's opinion on, like, why they should, like, hate a movie or something like that. I think it's supposed to be like, hey, it wasn't for me, but I'm not going to say it's not for you. You know,
yeah.
Somebody out there probably likes Dragon Ball Evolution. I mean,
for them. Yeah.
You know, it might be one of those things like a Tropic Thunder kind of thing. Maybe that's the only VHS they have and it's amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, I didn't even know the movie was made on VHS. That's the most important. That's the most interesting part of that story. But yeah, one of those things. But I think going back to Dr. Monroe, that one is totally worth. Go out of your way, watch that movie if you haven't. I think that's cool. And then you combine up that documentary, which is kind of, it feels like that should be like the special features if you bought it on Blu-ray. But you know, like that's what it is. Like the Heart of Darkness of like Apocalypse Now. But no, I think that movie's cool. You know, I mean, not a perfect movie, but it's like still very, very interesting.
It is an interesting movie, and figured this seemed like a good double feature for our for doing Halloween this year, like horror movies for October. So yeah,
so cool one there. Well, till then, go to oldmanorange.com for more podcasts, comic books like Pete the Boys, old animations, videos, and what have you. I'm Spencer Scott Holmes,
and I'm Ryan Dunnigan,
and I'll see you some other time.
Later, folks.